This podcast was made on Gubbi Gubbi country. I acknowledge the traditional ancestors and custodians of this land and pay my respect to elders past, present and emerging. Radio Vet Nurses brought to you by Vetoquinol and Vet Complaints Support. Welcome to episode 2 of the Registered mini-series. I'm Kat Walker. If you missed episode 1 of Registered, you might want to take 30 minutes to go back and listen to episode 1. Last episode, we looked at the legal and regulatory framework for veterinary medicine in Australia. We unpacked definitions and theory on the key issues surrounding registration and became familiar with the VNCA, AVNAT and the AVBC. We considered how the registration of veterinary nurses and technicians is linked to the other big industry issues, and I shared my personal belief that it's only in coming together that we have the power to make a change for good. In this episode, I'll be introducing you to more people who can inspire change in rethinking the regulatory frameworks and the need for nationally recognised mandatory registration. We're going to talk about professional status and the protection of title. What are they and why are they so important? We're in the land down under here, and sometimes it's useful to know what's going on in the rest of the world. We'll head overseas for a minute and see what's happening with our vet nurse and technician brothers and sisters in the States and the UK. But first, let's start by asking the question in Australia, how does progression towards professionalisation help us, and why is it important? And how about protection of title? I asked Jazz, Trish and Gary.
I think for me it's multi-pronged, I think. I feel that we need recognition, both in the public and within our profession, for the skills and knowledge that veterinary nurses and technicians bring to the team. And while some teams may demonstrate that on the floor, I think that we're still really lacking that in the profession overall. And I really believe we're lacking it in relation to the public's perception of what a veterinary nurse and technician does, or technician does, out the back, so to speak. And I think it's critical that we're able to move forward. And also, not to mention all of the amazing, hopefully amazing flow-on effects of this, which hopefully may include, you know, some additionally amazing career pathways and progression of veterinary nursing and technician to be more of a career rather than just a job, if that makes sense, because, you know, I've been doing this for almost 30 years now. I've been playing in vet practice since I was 11 years old, and it's really been a career for me, and I've still got 20 years to go, so there's got to be more for us to do out there. And I think that becoming a profession will help us get there and give us longevity in this amazing industry, which is what we need. I think that the recognition is the key, and providing avenues for people to study further. You know, Trish talks a lot about creating, you know, a body of knowledge and research that veterinary nurses have done in their own spaces, and that may keep people interested for longer, I think. And the more people stick around as veterinary nurses or in roles like that, I think that we're going to create spaces for us to grow. I just feel it in my bones. You know, the more that we're here, the longer we're around for. We're not just in, we do this job for 5 years or so and then we head off and have kids. Sorry, Gary. The girls head off and have the kids and the boys head off and have kids or whatever that looks like. But, and then, you know, we don't necessarily come back, or we come back in a different capacity, but it sort of then just becomes a job. And I think that professionalising may assist us in being able to push those limits.
I agree with Jazz, and I think critical to the professionalisation process and bringing about mandatory registration and regulation is developing a career pathway, because having a career pathway is pivotal to job satisfaction, retention, reward and greater remuneration, which are all really, really important for vet nurses and vet techs.
Yeah, Trish pretty much just touched on what I would have. I think it's the progression towards professionalisation, I think, is in the natural order for us now as we develop as our skills and how we add value into the veterinary team. And we have some huge, tremendous challenges that I think can only be faced with some of these steps, and that is, as Jazz was mentioning, it's about better recognition, utilization, as Trish mentioned, better remuneration, building those career pathways so that we're not losing our future leaders into other industries or other professions, because it's currently not very sustainable, or they don't see the career future that obviously all of us see because we've been doing this for 20 years now, but making sure that those career pathways are available for everyone. So in theory, anyone can work as a veterinary nurse in Australia without a qualification, and until we are recognised as a minimum standard, then we can't really build further on what that role within the one veterinary team is allowed to do. And we want to be able to build that into registration and regulation so that they can do more and therefore be valued more, achieve better remuneration for what they do, and also have some better role clarity so that there is a progressive career pathway within a clinical environment that also extends into the non-clinical career pathway, so into academia. And they are the people that are the future leaders of the nursing and technician profession.
Great. That makes a lot of sense. So we're sort of saying that because there's no protection of title, then whether you've got a diploma or a Cert 4 or a Cert 2 or no qualification, everybody in the clinic is operating, all of the nurses and techs in the clinic are operating at a similar level, just so that we're sure that nobody's operating outside of the scope of their ability and their knowledge. Whereas in having protection of title and registration, there could be more specific and clear guidelines allowing people with higher level qualification to be leveraged better.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it gives, like, in theory, registration and regulation then gives confidence to our clients, the community, but also to practice owners and our veterinarians that we can do these tasks and we can take some of that workload off our veterinarian colleagues as well.
Yeah, I was just going to add in, Gary, sorry. I wholeheartedly agree with you, because I think one of the biggest challenges that we're coming up against at the moment is that lack of clarity around scope of practice. And it really causes confusion in vet practices and also with the veterinary nurses and techs themselves. Professionalisation and regulation will clarify that. Hopefully, that's, you know, part of the plan, to clarify that scope of practice, to make it really clear what people can and can't do, and also to, you know, hopefully create some of those exceptions to acts of veterinary science. We're not talking about cutting or diagnosing or what have you, but things that nurses currently already do but aren't allowed to do.
Having spoken to the gang here, I decided to reach out to my favourite unicorn friend, Amy Newfield, to see how they're tackling registration and protection of title in the States. Scroll back through the original Radio Vet Nurse episodes to hear Amy's interview back in 2019 and why we should always assume good intention. Speaking of assuming, I think it's easy for us Aussies to assume they must have it all sorted in the States. They'll be able to tell us what to do, right?
Hello, Amy. Long time no speak.
Yes, thank you so much for having me back. I'm really excited.
It's good to have you again. Now, life's a bit different for you since I last had you on Radio Vet Nurse. So can you please tell me, and for new listeners, who you are and what you're up to?
Yeah, so I am now the owner of Veterinary Team Training. It is my own company. I'm also its only employee. So Veterinary Team Training is an online continuing education platform, and it's one of the largest ones, I think. I don't want to brag too much, but I think it might be the largest online CE platform where only veterinary technicians and veterinary nurses are the educators of the content. We have over 80 hours of race-approved content, so I'm really excited about that. But yeah, I've been in business, as we were discussing right before we popped on, almost a year. That's terrifying. So yeah, excited about it, nervous about it still. So yeah.
Congratulations. And that first year is definitely the hardest, when everything mm-hmm. you go to do, you're like, oh, I need a system for that. I need a process for that. I need to figure out how to do that. So if you've survived year one and you're still smiling, then I feel mm-hmm. like it's all looking up for you.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it.
Now, I've been chatting to some of my colleagues in Australia about veterinary nurse registration and the possibility of having a mandatory registration scheme. Now, although we are a big country, there's not too many states and territories, and it is still complicated. And then when I think of the United States and how it would work for you guys over there and what the current status is, it kind of makes my head hurt. So I thought, who better to call than my friend Amy and ask, what is the current status on the registration issue in the States? What are you guys doing?
Well, we have 50 states in the United States, and they each have their own governing body. And we're a very opinionated group, depending on the state. You don't even have to live here to appreciate how opinionated each individual state is. For example, I'm in Massachusetts. It is very different than Texas, which is very different than Ohio, which is very different than Alaska, Hawaii, California. And so when we became sort of a profession, it started kind of in the 1970s with the very first vet tech school in the state of New York. And they decided to go ahead and become animal health technicians at that time, because the AVMA, which is the organization seeing a lot of the veterinarian group basically, said that no one would use the word veterinary with technician. So they had to call themselves animal health technicians. And that was their title in the 1970s for a little period of time. And then shortly thereafter, they became veterinary technicians. And then after that, they became licensed veterinary technicians. And so that was just in New York. But in the state of Massachusetts, where I am, we have credentialed or certified veterinary technicians. So I'm a CVT. We have RVT, so registered veterinary technicians, out in the state of California. We have LVMTs in the state of Tennessee, licensed veterinary medical technicians. So we have four different titles, which makes us very unique in how we are all individually structured within our states. So it is truly state dependent here in the United States. And there has been a push probably in the last 6 to 7 years to try to get unification on a single title. And that I hate to say it, and I don't want to be like the negative person, but it's never going to happen while I'm alive. I'm okay with that. But I don't think we're ever going to see all 50 United States agreeing on anything, let alone a title for veterinary technology. So it gets very complex here.
Okay, and does it make it difficult to be working across states? Is the registration mandatory in all of, or just some of the states for those four categories?
Yes. So licensure is considered kind of, and registration, I should say, depending on the state, they tend to be the ones that it's mandatory. In my state, anyone can do any skill. That is, so long as you're not a veterinarian, obviously. You can graduate from high school and you can immediately start placing arterial lines and anesthesia and do whatever you'd like to do. I would say that about half the states require some type of mandatory registration. I wish I had the numbers for mm-hmm. you. But the other, 35 to 50% do not. Mm-hmm. So again, it gets very complex. And right now, along with probably you, as well as a lot of other countries, we're in a shortage of veterinary nurses and veterinarians. And so, interestingly enough, in some of our states, we are seeing almost a rollback of legislation in an effort to allow people to become, veterinary technicians, and I put it in bunny ears, without taking a national exam. So we do have a national exam. It's called the Veterinary Technician National Exam, VTNE. It's regulated and run by the AVMA, which is the same group that regulates veterinarian boards. So it's interesting for sure that we're kind of rolling back who can take that, or whether or not they need to even take it in order to become credentialed or in whatever state they're in. So it's definitely a hot button topic here right now.
Yeah.
Along with many other things that are hot button topics.
Here as well, and definitely linked to the shortage crisis, I think. So in your state, do for somebody to graduate high school and come into a clinic and be placing art lines and that sort of thing, do they need to have completed their a qualification or not?
No. Oh. The short answer is no.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. And so let me be very clear, because I want to make sure, because I know that this is a very heated topic.
Mm-hmm.
We, in what I call veterinary assistants, those are individuals who did not attend an AVMA accredited school and did not pass the VTNE. There are many fantastic vet assistants out there. I'm good friends with many of them. When I first graduated from my vet tech school, I became, into a leadership role. And very much, as soon as I became into this sort of tech manager role, they started asking me to interview people. And some of them were people from my actual alma mater. They graduated from school. We decide, yes, we like this candidate, hire them on. And others, a very well-meaning veterinarian, single owner of a general practice, would bring me brand new people. I've had auto mechanics, bank tellers, wait staff brought to me. And they would literally say to me, Amy, we would like you to meet so-and-so. They're going to be your new vet tech. And I was like, oh my goodness. Wow, here we go. Zero experience. And so here I was, maybe a couple years out of college, trying to train these individuals on planes of anesthesia, how to properly clean teeth and do dental prophies. What does it mean to even restrain an animal? How to read dog behavior, how to read cat behavior. It's overwhelming to train someone who has no knowledge. But that's how a large percentage of people in this industry start. And the difference is startling when you think about it, because the argument on a lot of veterinarians is, well, I can train anyone to be as good as someone who came out of school. And maybe that's true, but they will parallel each other very differently. The person coming out of school has done a lot of these things and they understand, and they understand the why, and they have at least baseline knowledge. And having trained both groups of people, somebody who doesn't even know how to hold off for a vein, there is no comparison. And so again, we can get a vet assistant running at the level of a vet tech, but it's going to take years to get there, whereas the vet tech comes out and at least has some baseline knowledge. So it is very interesting. But yes, in my state, once you graduate from high school, there is no laws, no nothing prohibiting you from monitoring anesthesia. Even if you have no baseline knowledge, pet owners are completely unaware of this.
Yeah, it is the same here. So yeah, you can get someone straight out of high school who hasn't done the Bachelor of Vet Tech or the Cert 2 or the Cert 3 or the Cert 4 and just say, we will train you up. But I agree. And having trained, you know, I used to have categories of veterinary nurse assistants in my clinic as well. And the benefit of somebody with the baseline knowledge is that since they're not rote learning, then they can extrapolate information to situations that pivot slightly because they understand, oh, well, in this situation, I might need to actually use discretion and do this because this is different. And so, yeah, I think we're sort of looking at the same situation. I guess I want to know your opinion on why is it important for veterinary nurses and technicians, firstly, to achieve professional status, and secondly, why is the protection of title important? And I think we've just been touching on that now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the importance of, you know, establishing baseline knowledge for an actual title and earning that title is so important. Because I have so many stories. And here's the story that I like to share with everybody. When I was graduating from college, I was interviewing at a bunch of local general practices, wasn't quite sure where I was going to work. I ended up interviewing at a facility that the practice owner was also the veterinarian, and she was running a little bit behind on surgery. She invited me into the surgery room. I said, well, do you have like a mask or a cap or anything? Just come on in, Amy. So there's this surgeon that I'm interviewing with who also owns the practice, and she is wearing at least a mask and a hat and, you know, a cap. And she's spaying this cat. On the floor of the surgery room is a gigantic mastiff with an endotracheal tube laying on its side. It had just finished surgery and was recovering in the surgery suite. the veterinary technician, and I put that in, you know, if you can't see me, I'm doing bunny ears around it as little quotation marks, vet tech. She said, this is vet tech so-and-so. Well, in the middle of the surgery, her husband came in eating a hamburger and then proceeded to talk to her. And they talked about some business. He left. She then proceeded to say to the veterinary technician, the cat's a little light, just turn it up. And with the isoflurane, she went ahead and turned it up all the way to 5. And then she said, well, just give it a little bit more oxygen too. And then turn the oxygen up to 3 liters a minute. And I was standing there at this interview going, there is no way I'm ever going to work for these people. She then left the patient because she told her veterinary technician to go do something or another. At this point, the mastiff stands up. The mastiff is now standing with the endotracheal tube in its mouth, looking at me, and to which Amy Newfield, who has not actually finished graduating from college yet, but is interviewing for potential jobs, said, would you like me to extubate this dog for you? She said, yes. And also there's a leash hanging over there. Go tell somebody to put it in a cage. So I extubate this dog. It's lucky it didn't chew through the tube. I then walk this dog out. The vet tech anesthesia person comes back in. She says, oh, we're wrapping up. Just go ahead and turn them off. That individual who is playing the role of the vet tech had no idea. They had no idea what they were doing or that they could have killed a patient. And I've spoken to so many veterinary assistants who have unfortunately had a death of their patient on their hand. And they then went to school and realized it was completely because I didn't have the knowledge. And it was just, I mean, that was a train wreck of a hospital that I very politely was like, I am not taking this job. You couldn't pay me enough. But the reality is that individual who loves animals, the same as everybody else, you know, in this career, could have killed an animal and they would have had no idea. And it's for that reason that we need to have requirements in order to do the things that we do. If pet owners knew that anyone just does this job and they have no idea what they're doing, they would be pretty upset about it, I think. So yeah, that's the story I like to share on why we need requirements. And there's a million of those stories, sadly, out there.
Oh, I could not agree more. And that's petrifying. And that's right. People can wear these consequences and the guilt associated with it, you know, for a really long time and not even know that they're exposed or that the patients are exposed to those risks.
Yeah, 100%. And so this is where we get into that title protection, because once we have requirements, then we have to protect the title. And the title is protected for veterinarians, registered nurses, medical doctors, to say you can't call yourself this unless you have a degree and have met the requirements as, you know, made by the state or the country or whatever it is. When you're performing medical procedures on animals, it is imperative we have requirements for that. Not everybody should be able to do it. And if we're doing it, we should understand the whys and understand the pros and cons of the things that we're doing to animal patients.
What is the general sort of feeling in the States at the moment about protection of title? And would it be veterinary nurse? Would it be veterinary technician? Or this is one of the things we can't agree on and it doesn't matter as long as we can differentiate between team members in any given clinic?
Yeah. So NAVTA, which obviously oversees, you know, they're the organization very similar to the AVMA, but for veterinary technicians, probably like 6 or 7 years ago, started a campaign called the Registered Veterinary Nurse Initiative. It was well-meaning. Their thought was all 50 states are going to go ahead and agree to become a registered veterinary nurse. And their rationale was, when you say I'm a veterinary nurse, the general public goes, oh, I know what that is, right? Makes sense. However, we're in the United States. We're not going to get 50 states to agree on literally anything. I mean, have you seen our politics? That's a mess. Like, I'm just saying that the topic of being one title as a veterinary technician is about as politicized as our actual politics.
Yeah, it's a very polarized state. It is. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm okay with not having a singular title.
Yeah.
But I do think every single state needs to have title protection to say these are the skills that only veterinary technicians can do. And that's called scope of practice, meaning, you know, we now have a scope of practice. But I also think we need hey, this is what defines a veterinary technician, so mm-hmm. that the general public, so that the pet owning community knows, when I go into a vet hospital, only the people calling themselves veterinary technicians have met a certain, you know, criteria. Just like when I go into a human healthcare facility, when someone says I'm a doctor, I know that they have met a certain set of requirements to call themselves a doctor. So I do think it's really important. And that is up to all 50 states. And like I said, some states are like, yes, we're on board. We're going to do title protection and scope of practice. And others are like, no, we're going to roll this whole thing back. You don't even have to go to school to be called a vet tech anymore because we're short staffed. So anyone can do this job.
Do any of the 50 states currently have title protection or scope of practice?
Yes. Again, roughly about 20, 25 of them do. The scope of practice, though, in the states that have scope of practice, it's barely a scope of practice.
Yeah.
For example, in one state that requires licensure, great. They have title protection. Good job for them. The difference between a veterinary technician and a veterinary assistant is the veterinary technician can only induce anesthesia. They're also the only one who can place an IV catheter, and that's it. So therefore, the vet assistant with no, that story that I told you about monitoring the anesthesia right out of high school, they had no idea. That can be a vet assistant. We apparently don't care about monitoring anesthesia, only the induction of, not even the recovery. And I thought, wow, that's the only thing that separates between a vet tech and a vet assistant.
And we know from the SEPSEF study that recovery is the most dangerous time as well. And so...
Yeah. Especially brachycephalic breeds, but we don't care about that because
in
their laws, it's just induction that only vet techs can deal with. And I'm like, the scope of practice is poorly defined in even the states that have title protection.
Okay. So it seems like our vet nurse and vet tech brothers and sisters in the states don't have it sorted after all. But the UK has registered veterinary nurses, so surely they'll know what to do, right? We'll be heading over to the UK to find out after this short break. Radio Vet Nurse is brought to you by Vetoquinol and Vet Complaints Support. Vetoquinol has been the number one sponsor of Radio Vet Nurse since 2019. In the Registered series, we're considering how mandatory vet nurse registration could be a game changer. Vetoquinol has just launched its own game changer, Felpreva. It's a groundbreaking new parasite treatment designed specifically for cats. It's convenient and easy to use, providing all-in-one parasite cover with the longest-lasting flea and paralysis tick protection available in a single dose. So while Vetoquinol is busy revolutionizing parasite protection for cats with Felpreva, let's look towards our own revolution with a national and mandatory vet nurse and technician registration framework. Support for Radio Vet Nurse comes from Vet Complaints Support, or VCS. Working in our industry can be hard on our mental health. One of the biggest hazards is exposure to challenging client interactions and conflict, usually around finances and expectations. VCS works in partnership with clinics to minimize the harm of these interactions on team members. Subscribing clinics outsource the handling of client complaints and concerns to VCS and receive support, guidance, and benchmarking data to reduce their client conflict risk profile. Head to vetcomplaints.com to see how you can delegate client complaints and concerns to the team at VCS so that your team can spend less time worrying about one-star Google reviews and more time providing five-star patient care. Welcome back to the Registered miniseries. After speaking with Amy in the States, I decided to have a Zoom cuppa with Lacey Pitcher from the UK. Lacey is a grassroots RVN who trained via the UK diploma route. Her passion for building community and networks has led her to a term on the British Veterinary Nursing Association Council and roles in mental health at the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons. She now sits as the editor of VN Times, a worldwide free access publication shining a light on so many of the wonderful things about vet nursing and its community.
We'll start with the UK. So the UK itself, Scotland, England, Wales, and Northern Ireland are all classed as the UK, which may seem really silly to point out, but the kind of registration and legalities between Northern Ireland and Ireland are quite different. So we'll start with the UK, because that's where I am. So registration is mandatory. I currently work as an editor at VN Times, and we're getting really, really specific with the language surrounding registration as well. So at the moment in the UK, to be classed as a veterinary nurse, you must be either a student veterinary nurse enrolled with the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, and then when you graduate, you join the register and you're an RVN, so a registered veterinary nurse. The language that we used to use was qualified veterinary nurse because you've been through training. However, now that you have to be registered, we're trying not to use the word qualified, because if you're a qualified veterinary nurse, you're not registered technically. So that might have been that you trained and qualified long, long ago before registration was mandatory in the UK. And so we're trying to get really specific with the language, but currently the title is not protected. So anyone therefore can use the title veterinary nurse despite not having registration and not being regulated. Things are slightly different in Ireland itself because they're kind of registration of veterinary nurses came later. They were very, very clever and they protected the title at the same time, which is why I make the differentiation between the two. And I think in terms of leading the charge, they saw the challenge of protecting the title long before.
And what are the barriers for the UK in protecting the title?
So currently the barriers mainly surround other nursing kind of sectors. Dental veterinary nurses, their title is protected, and they are working really, really closely with particularly the BVNA, so the British Veterinary Nursing Association, to share how they've done that, the challenges they came across. But currently the Veterinary Surgeons Act that names our title is really out of date. And to get that changed, to get that updated, and there are lots and lots of different things. For example, one of my biggest bugbears is it currently only says he. The Veterinary Surgeons Act only refers to he, which is really, really outdated. But to get that changed, we have to change the Veterinary Surgeons Act. It needs to be updated and rewritten in lots of areas to reflect the profession it now serves. So for me, that's kind of one of the biggest challenges, and protecting the title is kind of bundled into that. But it's so multifaceted, and getting time in Parliament with the world as it is incredibly challenging. And every time our government changes, so does what we need in Parliament and parliamentary time.
And what are the real world consequences for vets and nurses and veterinary business owners on the ground of the lack of protection of title?
Really simply, protecting the title is kind of paramount for us, and we're fighting hard for it in multiple areas. Because anyone can call themselves a registered veterinary nurse, when we join the register, we become regulated. So if something happened in practice, nurses are regulated as well. So if the fault of misconduct, for example, were found to be the nurse, not the vet, previously, because we were under the direction of the vet could be reprimanded. As professionals in the UK, nurses found to be breaking our code of conduct are also regulated. And that means that we hold ourselves to the code because there are consequences for not doing so. If anyone can call themselves a registered veterinary nurse, the public would assume that everyone has the same training. And unfortunately, that isn't the case. And in terms of animal welfare and the risk associated with not training and not understanding fully, firstly, for the nurses who have put in the hard yards and trained and gone through numerous exams and different kind of goalposts to meet our quality as registered professionals, if anyone can call themselves a veterinary nurse, I think it's really difficult for the nurses that have done it to maintain momentum and to stay empowered. But on the flip side of that, the impact on animal welfare for having people who have never done any training, someone could literally walk in off the street tomorrow and declare themselves a veterinary nurse. That's really worrying. And I certainly, if my animals are in hospital, I would expect that people are trained to a certain level. And with that, have the support to carry out the work that they say they're doing. And it's very difficult for the public to tell who is and who isn't registered. So the implications are huge. And I do think in terms of retention, when you can be proud to call yourself an RVN, we retain people because it's that, you know, we're really proud of what we do. We worked hard to get there. So if anyone can call themselves, why would we? What's the point? Is the question that lots of people start asking themselves. And that's really sad. Really, really sad. So that's why we're being really, really specific over here with trying not to use qualified, because we used to use qualified, and we absolutely are. If you have been a student nurse and then you've joined the register, you are qualified. But before we were registered in the UK, you would still be qualified, and there are still numerous nurses who qualified but never joined the register, and therefore they're not regulated. And so if you're not registered, you're not regulated, you don't have to carry on with your CPD. I'm not sure what you call it there, if it's still CPD.
CPD, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have to do 15 hours a year. Otherwise, we're not compliant with our registration. If you're qualified and you're not on the register, you don't have to do any of that.
Yeah.
And so are you up to date?
Yeah. So what's the typical scenario in veterinary clinics? Is there a sort of a range of approaches? Like do some clearly differentiate, these are our registered veterinary nurses, these are our qualified veterinary nurses, these are our vet nurse assistants, or do some just say, these are our veterinary nurses?
Yeah, so most just say these are our veterinary nurses. And there are practices really, really trying hard here, from the very small one vet, one nurse practices to the huge multidisciplinary hospitals, trying really hard to make it clearer. There are some practices now that will have posters on the wall of uniforms so that members of the public can differentiate between who is who, and you know, who they can ask questions of and where that lies. But technically, I did a quick search last week and there was a head nurse not registered on a website as a head nurse, not registered.
Yeah.
No picture given, the only member of staff with no photo given. So we have opposite ends of the scale. There was a brilliant survey that came out last year from the BVNA who asked across the profession and the public what the perception was of registered veterinary nurses. And many of the public said that their expectation was that people were qualified and registered and wouldn't be able to tell the difference, but they also thought it was very important that people were registered and had, you know, a benchmark for training. But there were still lots and lots of practices who were using, we have auxiliaries here quite often, and they are worth their weight in gold. They're amazing, but they're not registered veterinary nurses. And some don't want to ever be registered veterinary nurses. They love their role and it is slightly different to what registered nurses do. But they couldn't differentiate. And in terms of what we can do, our code of conduct is very, very specific as to what is an act of Schedule 3, what can be done by someone who is registered. For example, IV injections, they can only be done by someone who is registered. So if you're not a veterinary nurse, if you're not registered, you shouldn't be doing any of those things. And unfortunately, it's very difficult to reprimand someone who isn't registered. That's for their protection as well. I think it's really important that it doesn't become just a blame culture. If someone hasn't been through the training process and isn't aware of where the kind of the rules lie, because that's part of our training, is to understand our code of conduct, then they might be doing something well with outside their remit that has been normalised. Yeah. So, for example, night nurses who are often on their own. Well, if they're on their own and they're not registered, who is carrying out treatment? So it's multifaceted. It's a big, big conversation. And we've made lots of progress, but there's so much more to go, so that it's across the board, and protecting the title, we feel, is paramount to that. And it's protecting the profession, the public, the staff we work with. If you've got two nurses working side by side and one is registered and regulated and one is not, if something goes wrong, where do we draw the line? Because it's really difficult. It's a big conversation, but I don't think we should avoid conversations just because they're big. How do things work there?
So it sounds like auxiliaries in the UK are similar to veterinary nurse assistants here or vet tech assistants in the States. But but in a lot of clinics in Australia, anybody within the nursing department can be called a veterinary nurse, and that can be somebody who's qualified, not qualified, qualified and registered, qualified and unregistered. So again, it can be very difficult to differentiate. So it's just really a growing group of individuals who are choosing to join the voluntary registration scheme. But there is a push from the rest of the veterinary industry to have mandatory registration of veterinary nurses to help the vets as well, because obviously we have a huge shortage of vets here, like everywhere else. What year did registration become mandatory in the UK?
So the register opened in 2007.
Okay.
And we had quite a period of time where people could start registering. It wasn't you must do it now, so that people could kind of feel their way a bit. Yeah. So I started as a kennel assistant.
Yeah.
And kind of worked my way up through practice.
Yeah.
And so when I started, there were already the rumblings of this is possible. Mm-hmm. Now, looking back now, when I started in practice, I started at a practice with a view to become a veterinary nurse. The practice I worked at on my second week had me doing anaesthetics. No training, no registered veterinary nurse. Ooh. Because we're in a period of transition, that was allowed.
Yep. It's still allowed
here. That was normalised.
Still allowed here, yep.
When I look back now, I shudder at the patients that, with all the will in the world, and I adore animals, I look back now and think, if that had been my animal and I knew, would I be happy?
No. Yep.
And that, for me, is the crux of the difference. The nurses that I got to work with later were actually phenomenal mentors. They really kind of instilled in me a sense of pride in what we do, and pride in the work we do and what we do in the community. And that I really feel came hand in hand with being registered, because yes, there's a disciplinary process. Yes, there is. But if you're trying and striving to do the best you can, and there's a set of guidelines there to show what good looks like, then actually the practice I started at wasn't even a training practice. And because registration wasn't mandatory and you couldn't see, I didn't know.
No.
I didn't know any different. And so with registration came clarity of where could train, who was training me, was I being trained to a suitable level, was I being trained to understand the law in the UK. So that all came hand in hand, and so I'm really grateful that I was in practice at that time, because I can reflect very clearly what was happening then.
Yes.
There are certain things that I should never have been doing, but I didn't know better. I only knew what I was seeing.
So having spoken with my peeps on the ground in the States and the UK, I've heard two versions of basically the same story. That in their early careers, they were put into situations where they or other unqualified people were asked to monitor anesthesia, which in hindsight felt like something pet owners would and should be really concerned about. These situations were also pretty fraught for the team members who couldn't possibly know how out of their depth they were and how catastrophic the consequences could have been. Lacey and Amy were both reflecting back to a time in their early careers, but stories just like this happen in vet clinics in Australia every day. We take people with no formal study or qualification, or maybe a handful of subjects under their belt, put a badge on them that says vet nurse, and put them in theatre to monitor anaesthetics. The States are in an even more difficult situation than Australia, with different rules for 50 states compared to our 8, and a political climate of unprecedented polarisation. Like, get in line, VetMed. There's so much other stuff that needs sorting out. No offence, America. I love you, and I'm coming to IVEX in September. I thought the UK had it all sorted with registration, but without protection of title, it's still not ideal. It seems clear that we need to be like Ireland and be clever about it, making sure that we get protection of title and registration in one shebang. Yes, that is the technical term. So here's to you, our vet nurse and technician brothers and sisters in Ireland. When it comes to registration and protection of title, we bow down at your amazing accomplishments. I think that between Lacey, Amy, Gary, Trish and Jazz, we've made a pretty compelling case for why professional status and protection of title is important. Coming up in the next episode, I want to dig further into the related concepts of autonomy and utilization and unpack them a bit. What do they look like and why are they so important? I also want to address some of the anecdotal concerns that people might have around registration and look at some of the boundaries to getting registered. Like I said, it's not the case that registration is only good and that it doesn't present genuine challenges and concerns for some people. But like my spicy RVN friend Lacey, I am confident that we can find solutions.
I wouldn't see it as a barrier, I'd see it as a podium. It is a way for us to say, I did it. I did the work. Watch me. Now see what we can do.
Thank you for joining me again on the Registered series. I don't want to be a downer, pointing at industry issues like workforce shortages, salary, mental health, rambling about canaries in the coal mine again, but I'm here offering strategies and solutions too. Hopefully this episode has explained how professional status and protection of title will result in improved career longevity, recognition, pay, and enable us to work to our full potential. Digging this new tunnel is hard, but just by listening to this series and arming yourself with the knowledge, we're already working together as a collective. Whether you are a veterinary nurse, a veterinary technician, and wherever you are in the world, you have to pull together. Thanks for joining me on Radio Vet Nurse Registered. This series may be uncomfortable at times, but I believe that the time to get registered is here, and I thank you for joining me on the journey. I would like to thank Vetakinol and Vet Complaints Support for their sponsorship of the Registered mini-series. Coming up in the next episode, I'll be looking at how registration will improve autonomy and utilization, unpacking those concepts, and explaining why they're important. We're also going to talk about some of the boundaries to getting on board with registration and what we can do about them. See you in a week.